Well, William, hey, I'm Alice. That's Tom. We've been talking about the whole concept of Hefker. The genesis of it was, we talked about in the mission of the case, where one person is mudur hanar from somebody else, but they're on a trip and he doesn't have what to eat, so therefore the other person puts some food on a rock or whatever, declares a Hefker, and the Tanakhama had said that then that's good, the other person's allowed to take it, and Rabbi Yossi had said that not. We went into a discussion yesterday of why Rabbi Yossi would say that. We had Rabbi Yochanan's position that, actually over the last couple of days, actually, we had Rabbi Yochanan's position that Rabbi Yossi says there's no such time, there's no period of time when it's actually Hefker. It goes from being in one person's Rishos to being in the other person's Rishos without an intermediate stage of Hefker. Therefore, it's like giving a Matana, therefore it's also.
Means the other one can take it,
but up until he takes it, it still belongs to the first person. And then we had Rava's point of view that no, really Rabbi Yossi might have said that midoraita it would work, but midrabbanan we don't want to allow it because of matnas beis chorin, because of the possibility that he's not really truly declaring it hefker, but only hefker for the purpose of evading the ned. Not avoiding maaser, that was something else. That was as far as being mafker field. In the case of the Mishnah, it was in order to evade his neder. So that brought us into a discussion as far as a person who's master his field, that the 3-day grace period and all of that. So there we talked about that it had to do with Meister, because we wanted to avoid people who declare their field Hefker and then immediately go and reacquire it and make themselves chaser for Meister by doing that. We left off then with the last thing we discussed, though, was we had a Mishnah that says that somebody made his field Hefker, and then his vineyard Hefker, and the next morning he started harvesting it, implying that, so is it Hefker or not? So we said that he's potter from Meiser. So now how is that according to Rabbi Yossi? How is he potter from Meiser? If we said
someone comes and picks it up.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's still in his possession, and yeah, I mean, we discussed also the two different explanations. We had Ula's versus Rish Lakish's explanations of when does Rabbi Yossi say you have the 3-day grace period and when not, we said according to Rish Lakish anyway, we said that according to Rish Lakish, really, the whole braisa that we had yesterday involving the 3 days was also according to Rabbi Yossi, because we said really it should be Hefker right away, but Rabbi Yossi had said 3 days. So not that it should be Hefker right away, it's only Hefker when somebody else takes it. So if nobody else has taken it, how are we saying that it's Hefker to the extent that it's possible from Meiser? So we said that that actually Rish Lakish would have to say, actually Ula would have to say also, that braisa goes specifically according to the Chachamim. So that there is a stage of
Yossi,
well, we wanted to, we would have preferred to say that the braisa goes according to everybody, but now yesterday we left off that we're forced to say that braisa of Hamaskir Karmai goes according to the Rabbanan, because according to Rabbi Yossi, it seems there's no way to make it work. According to Ula, definitely not, because he said that the 3-day thing is only according to the Rabbanan, and even according to the Rish Lakish, who argued said that the 3-day thing is according to Rabbi Yossi also. Nevertheless, though, the point is that Rabbi Yossi is saying that until somebody else takes it, then Hefker hasn't fully taken effect yet, and so therefore you can't say he's potter. So now the Gemara is going to try another tack. The Boyesema, another possibility how we could explain this. You could have, there's a difference whether the person declared it Hefker in front of 2 people or fewer, or whether he declared it Hefker in front of 3 people. Now, what are we referring to? The Ran says we're talking about the Mishnah of Hamakir as Karmai. Again, we left off yesterday saying that Mishnah seems to be only according to the Chachamim. That Braisa, rather, seems to be only according to the Chachamim. Now we can find a way, maybe, to make it work according to Rabbi Yossi also. Because Rabbi Yossi himself would distinguish, when does Rabbi Yossi say that when... All this time we've been saying that Rabbi Yossi says there's no period in between of Hefker, there's no intermediate stage of Hefker, but actually we're saying now Rabbi Yossi might make a distinction within that, whether you declared it Hefker in the presence of 3 people or not. If you declared it in front of three people, then we would say that it is considered, that there is really a stage of Hefker. Then Rabbi Yossi would agree with the Chachamim that it goes out of his Rishus and becomes an intermediate stage of Hefker until somebody else takes it.
What do we think that's?
The difference is because the logic is like this. If you only have two or fewer people, when you're declaring the Hefker, what's going to happen? Effectively, what it means is you're pretty much making a Hefker only in order for one of them to take it. That's not really considered full-fledged Hefker. You have the problem.
For one of the two people?
Just for one of the two people. There's actually also different mepharshim discussed when we say two versus three. Do we mean...
So they're not
Adim we're going to talk about soon. That's why you need three. That you should have two Adim and one person who can be Zosa in it. But if you have fewer than three, there's no piercing to it. It doesn't become publicized. So therefore, effectively, it's not really a full-fledged Hefker. Either because it's not publicized, so therefore it's like it's not available for anybody to take, which the whole point of Hefker is that it should be available for anybody. Or the idea is that you're basically doing it only in order for one or another of them to get it, and that's not really considered Hefker. Hefker is really that's available to everybody, not just that we have the case in our Mishnah where you're declaring it Hefker effectively only for the other person to pick it up. And that's why Rabbi Yossi is saying no good.
But the two people could be obligated to make a modaf, an announcement.
But it's not really, I mean, of course you can make an announcement, you could do it, but we're not talking. Three people already make a piercing. Three people is considered, there's more of a piercing. So therefore, so that Mishnah about Hamaskir as Kamoy can be talking about that he was masculine in the presence of three people, where even according to Rabbi Yossi, then that would be considered full-fledged Hefker. It takes effect right away, and we don't say that, and we say it does leave his Rishus and become Hefker. Therefore, if he woke up the next morning and nobody has taken it yet, and he comes and then takes it back and starts harvesting it, good, then he falls from Maisa.
Why do we choose just karma? Why does that mean?
Because that was the case that the Braisa mentioned, mainly because the Braisa wanted to mention all the different Matnas Anim. That you would still be chayav in.
So that includes all the matanis.
A vineyard has the most matanis has the most matanis anim of any type of land. A field of grain only has peya, leket, and shitcha. What do you call it? Okay, so leket is the equivalent of peret for vineyards. Vineyards also have oilolois, those undeveloped clusters of grapes that we talked about yesterday. Only vineyards have that. So preposterous, therefore the Mishnah picked that. The Braisa picked that example.
Fruits also can go on.
Fruits, you don't have the concept of oilolos. Fruits, you just have, you have, no, that doesn't work. That's not ripe or unripe. It's oilolos are clusters of grapes that are not fully shaped. The individual grapes on the cluster themselves may be ripe, but the cluster itself doesn't have the proper shape of the cluster.
And that makes a difference.
Yes, that's what the Torah says. You're not allowed to pick the oilolos from your vineyard. And that's a special mitzvah that applies only to vineyards. Okay.
You have to leave it to the Aniyam.
Yeah. Okay, anyway. So the point is that even within Rabbi Yossi's opinion himself, we could argue that there's a difference. Our Mishnah was talking about what do you do with declaring the food Hefker? You had yourself and the other person. That's fewer than three. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi is saying no good. Whereas Hamaskir as Kamoy is talking about if you did it in front of three or more people, then you're good. The Chum obviously don't make that distinction. Rashi learns it a little differently. That the Gemara is saying that the Gemara is making the distinction within our Mishnah itself. When would Rabbi Yossi say that it's also when there's less than three? But if there were three, he would agree with the Chachamim that it actually becomes Hefker. So the previous braisa that we talked about, Hamakir Tadeu, with a 3-day grace period and all, would also have to be, according to this explanation, it would also have to be that it's talking about where you did it in front of fewer than three people. Same idea. Because we see Rabbi Yochanan says, in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehitzadok, if you make something Hefker in front of three people, it is Hefker, because then it means you had everybody in the world in mind. Because there's a piercing to it, but in front of two people, since there's no piercing to it, then you just effectively made it Hefker just for them, and therefore it's more like giving a gift. That's how they're on it.
That applies to all
Hefker? So one second. So according to him, he's saying, yeah, well, that would be the idea. Anything of Hefker, although the Gemara is going to bring a different opinion in a second. One issue is, though, that the Rosh points out, all this time in the Sugya, we started out the Sugya that Rabbi Yochanan explained Rabbi Yossi's, that Rabbi Yochanan explained Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah differently. Nothing to do with three people versus two people, but having to do with does it go into a status of Hefker or does it not go into a status of Hefker? So all of a sudden Rabbi Yochanan here is bringing something involving three or two people. So the Rosh says that. So the Rosh says, in fact, one possible way of understanding it is Rabbi Yochanan has his own opinion on the subject, and then now he's quoting the opinion of his teacher, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehitzadok. So he himself holds there's no difference two or three people. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehitzadok, who was his Rebbe, held that there is. The other possibility, of course, is that even Rabbi Yochanan himself, all this time, when he said, according to Rabbi Yossi, that there's no status of Hefker, he himself meant that only if he did it in front of two people, like the case of our Mishnah.
Either way,
yeah. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi Omar, whereas Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi says no, Dvar Torah afilu be'echad habe Hefker. No, really, midaraisa, even if you do Hefker in front of one person, it's Hefker. Well, ma tam omer b'shloisha. So why do the Chachamim say you need three people? Kadeshia he echad zeicha or shnayim edim. In order that you're able to have one person is able to be zeicha, and the other two can be edim that he actually acquired it from Hefker.
And that's the halacha.
Wait. So before we get to the halacha, first of all, when we say afilu be'echad, what does that mean? Does that mean one person besides the master himself, or does it mean just the master himself? On his own, can declare something Hefker and it would be valid Minatera. That is actually Machalukas Rishayim. The Rambam holds that when we say Be'echad means you have to have at least one other person there, so like the case of our Mishnah, but for example, if a person were to just sit in his own house and say, I declare this Hefker, nothing would happen, even Minatera. Tosfos and various other Rishayim say that no, it means Be'echad means even just him, himself, without anybody else being present, that it would be valid Hefker. One place, by the way, where that comes up, and so yeah. As far as the halacha, yeah, the Ran discusses, and the Ran and Tosfos discuss that yes, the halacha is like Rabbi Shurban Levi against Rabbi Yochanan that Minatora Hefker is valid with only one person, and this has implications in a couple of areas of halacha.
We need himself.
Well, so that's the thing. So again, according to the Rambam, you'd need one other person there. So, usually we do paskin like that. There are certain like the Rambam, that if a person were to declare something Hefker by himself, it wouldn't work. One place where that comes up, actually, is in connection with the halachas of chametz. We talked about yesterday. Technically, a person can be makir as chametz, and that's good enough. Just midrabanan, you have to do bedikah and bitul and whatever, but still, there are cases where, for whatever reason, you're not able to mevayer the chametz, and therefore you only makir it. The Rambam would say that works not because of the regular rules of Hefker, but only because of a special thing that the Torah says tashbisu. They have to get rid of your chametz, and therefore, for that particular case, then we say that it's good enough. Special case that it's good enough even when nobody else is around. Where Tosfos would say that it's a regular case of Hefker.
Therefore, you need something
else. And no, therefore, according to Tosfos, you don't need anybody else because they say that it's good enough just to have that minatora is good enough. So usually we would say midrabanan, you need three. But in a case like that, where you don't have a choice, then you have that. We talked about yesterday as far as the whole business of a person who has an animal rented out to a goy and then is masker for Shabbos. Again, ideally you masker it in the presence of three people, like we say every year. If you can't, then you do it at least in front of one person. And if you don't even do that, then the less rare the post can say you can rely on Tosfos' opinion that it's good enough midaraisa without anybody else, just with you. And then I mentioned yesterday that the Alter Rebbe points out that when are you being masquered anyway? You're being masquered only for the period of time the goy is working with it, and during the time the goy is working with it anyway, nobody else can acquire it. So that protects it that somebody else won't walk off with it.
When you masquer something, do you need someone else, or just you do it yourself?
No, in fact, we learned previously. I mean, also the goy can sit off the idea of just verbally declaring it, isn't it?
So why is there such a difference between?
Because Hefker is, the Rambam describes it as a type of neder, but it's not really a neder after all, and it's certainly not hektish. Hektish is a more serious thing.
It still should follow the same.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Hektish is you taking it out of your reshus and putting it into the reshus of hektish. Here you're taking it out of your reshus and putting it in nobody's reshus. Anyway, well, before we turn to the next Amud, all this time, when we went through this whole sugya, we were all explaining it on the basis of the idea that we were explaining it on the basis of Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Rabbi Yossi. That Rabbi Yossi is saying, at least in certain cases, that there's no status of Hefker. Something either belongs to one person or belongs to another person. There's no in-between status of Hefker. One problem with that, though, and the Ran points this problem out, is the Gemara ended up schlugging that up. On Mem Gimel Amud Beis, 2 days ago, we ended up schlugging that up. We said we had the case of Mitzvah and Lurish and Mekulam L'Sheni, the case over there involving the Shchiv Merah, two gifts, or the gifts to two Avadim or whatever, where we said that there doesn't seem to be a distinction between what you were masked before your neder and what you were masked after the neder, which in turn means that we don't have a way of understanding what Rabbi Yossi says in a Braisa on the subject about there being a difference whether the neder or the hefter comes first, and therefore that takes away Rabbi Yochanan, so that undercuts Rabbi Yochanan's whole point.
But that's only we could say when there is a division of the hefker.
No, but that's not. No, but the point is, Rabbi Yossi had said in a Braisa, we had at the beginning of the sugya right after the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi had said in a Braisa that there's a difference in the case of on Mishnah where the mudir puts the food on the rock and the madir is able to take it. That Rabbi Yossi says that doesn't work if the neder came before the hefker, but it does work if the hefker came before the neder. We said why. We wanted to say because maybe he doesn't include what was hefker in his neder. But we see from that case that you do include what you already were machna to one person in what you were machna to somebody else. So we slugged up that whole point of Rabbi Yochanan. How can the Gemara then be spending over here a block and a half explaining the whole thing according to that understanding of Rabbi Yochanan, which is rejected? So because of that, the Rosh has a long explanation over here, and also Tosfos discusses Yehav Rabbeinu Tam versus the Ri, who have two different ways of explaining the sugya. One is the way that we explained it all this time. The other way, the Rosh goes into some detail over here, quoting from Rabbi Eliezer of Metz, one of the Balei Tosfos, who explains the whole sugya according to Rava's explanation. We said Rava's explanation of Rabbi Yossi was that really min haTorah hefker takes effect. There is such a thing as a status of hefker, but because of matnas beis korban, that's why Rabbi Yossi said you can't do it in the Mishnah. So therefore, as we go through the sugya, you start off again with the braisa about the 3 days. So that would be according to the Rabbanan. We don't, just like in the Mishnah, we don't say that, just like in the Mishnah, the Chachamim are not concerned about matnas beis chorin, so also in that braisa, the Chachamim are not concerned about it. The only reason why they would say the 3-day grace period is just because, look, during the 3 days, people don't know yet about the hefker, so people are going to see him eating without taking meiser from it, and they're going to think that he's eating tefil. So it's a matter of marisayin, basically. But when it comes to nedarim, though, since everybody does know that he said that he's also to have anah from him, people do know that. So okay, people don't know that. What's going to happen? Reuven is also to have enough from Shimon, so we're saying Shimon is allowed to take some of his food and declare it hefker, and then Reuven can take it. Fine, you're going to argue people are going to not know that Shimon declared it hefker during those 3 days. Fine, people also don't know that Reuven is also in the first place to have enough from Shimon. When they see that Shimon's food is being eaten by Reuven, they're not going to think anything's the matter. As opposed to if people see that Reuven himself declared something hefker, declared his field hefker, and then within the 3 days is eating the produce of it without taking meiser, people are going to think that he's eating kevel. So that would be the logic why we would say so far that braisa would be according to the Rabbanan, because again they're not concerned about the matnas beis chorin business. But then we said then the braisa continued. We said on Mevdalat Amud Aleph at the top, we said that if you declare it hefker only for a period of time, for a month or a week or what have you, then we said that it depends whether somebody else is zosei in it or not. So there the idea is that would be according to Rabbi Yossi. We're concerned about matnas beis chorin, that you don't want to, you want to make him still chayev and meiser until somebody else actually takes it. And that means, Rabbi Yossi would say, even in that case, how much more so in a case of regular hefker? So that's what brought us to ask the question, isn't that braisa then self-contradictory? The first part of it is the point of the Rabbanon, who are not worried about matnas based chayrin. The second part is the point of Rabbi Yossi, who is worried about matnas based chayrin. So we said that Ullah wanted to say that the whole braisa goes according to the Rabbanon, and the difference is in the case of hefker l'zman, hefker for a week or whatever, it's not a common thing. People are not going to think it wasn't hefker. It's not a common enough case that people are, it's an unusual enough case that we're not worried about people thinking that it wasn't hefker and that he's eating tevel. And then we had Ullah's explanation that the first part is also is that on the contrary, the first part of the braisa is also according to Rabbi Yossi. The difference is that Rabbi Yossi doesn't want to make him chayev and meiser because you don't want people to think that hefker is chayev and meiser. So even if after three days nobody has taken it yet, we're still going to say we don't want people to think that hefker is chayev and meiser because then they're going to come to take from what's chayev on what's potter and vice versa. Therefore, we say after 3 days, even if nobody picked it up yet, according to WAC, we would say at that point, forget matnas beis chayrin, any of that concern. If after 3 days, nobody's taken it, there's obviously no concern about that. And therefore we will declare it actual hefker. Theoretically, we could have done it at the beginning, after the first day, but then already we'd be concerned about matnas beis chayrin. But it's unusual that it should stay 3 days without anybody picking it up. It means the case in the next parak where somebody where Yitzchak gave the wedding hall and whatever as a present to Lavan, and Lavan turned around and gave it to Hekdesh and Yitzchak said, I didn't give it to you to give to Hekdesh.
Why it's called matnas beis chayrin?
Because beis chayrin is where it happened. So there, matnas beis chayrin is the concept. We don't want there to be a kind of gift that is transparently obvious. You're not giving it as a real gift, but rather you're only giving it in order to evade a neder. So then we go on and say that Rabbah gives a different explanation during the 3 days it's also Rabbi Yossi is not concerned about matnas beis chayrin, but again during the 3 days you don't want on the contrary, during the 3 days when we say mipnei haramoyin, it's not like we learned all this time that mipnei haramoyin means the chachamim said that theoretically it should that mina torah we have to go right away and just the chachamim said wait 3 days for it to take effect. No, according to this explanation, even mina torah the hefker doesn't take effect until 3 days are over. Mipnei haramoyin. The Torah, according to this explanation, left it up to the Chachamim to determine when Hefker will take effect, and they determine that within 3 days you have a problem with Ramoyim, and after 3 days you don't have a problem with Ramoyim. During the 3 days you do, and therefore the Hefker doesn't take effect in the Daraisa yet, and after that it does. Which therefore then we said, since Natura during those 3 days is not yet Hefker, then it's still Chayev. So then that brought us to the question the question of Midaraisa versus Midrabanon that we mentioned yesterday. Aren't you going to have a problem mixing up what's Chayev and what's Potter Midaraisa versus Midrabanon? And we said you take Maisa out of the field itself. Then we go on, and then the Gemara goes on over there to continue with what we learned today, that again the Gemara wants to change its mind, not why according to Rabbi Yossi doesn't the hefker take effect in 3 days, not because of Ramoyim, not because of cheaters, but because there's a difference of whether you do it in front of two or three people. If you do it in front of three people, then there's obviously no Ramos going on because you make it publicized and now everybody knows about it. Whereas then Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi finishes off by saying that no, even Minatora Hefker takes effect right away. You don't even need the 3 days. Even if you did it only in front of one person, the whole concept that you need three is the whole concept is that you need three is only Midrabanan in order to make a pirsum. So one person can be Zercha and two people can be Eidos. So therefore, that'll effectively prevent any problem with Ramayim. Nobody's going to make the field hefker in front of three people, which is the only way Midrabanan is going to be effective, because they'll be afraid that one of those three people now will take it. So that bypasses the Ramayim. So now this is another way of explaining this whole sugya that we just had that doesn't involve us saying at all that Rabbi Yossi would say anything about there's not a status of hefker. Rather, we're saying that Rabbi Yossi is concerned about matnas beis chayrin, that Rabbanan are not concerned about it, and that drives the whole sugya. Either way, the bottom line is that, yeah, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, so in that Torah is good enough even with one, and that was the relevance we talked about as far as the halachas of Chometz and Shabbos. Only Midrabbanan do you need three. Hadron halacha ein bein amur. Don't think we're getting to any easier stuff yet. Not quite yet. Mishnah says, Hashutfin shenadur hana zemizeh, two partners who both they own a chaser in partnership, for example. So they made a neder not to have hana one from the other. Asurim lekanes v'chaser. Neither of them is allowed to go into this chaser that they own jointly. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, whereas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, no, each person can go into his and can go into his area, into his chatzah. Now, what does all this mean? So let's start with the beginning. Let's start like this. We learned in the previous parak that we learned about the concept of vidur. There's a case where you have a minor kind of hana that the average person wouldn't mind. We said, according to Rabbi Eliezer, nevertheless, even that's also in the case of a mudr hana. Therefore, we said, for example, the other guy's not allowed to walk onto your property, except for the exceptions that we learned in the previous perek, like Bikul Cholim, etc. So here we're taking according to that. Why would Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov say that it's fine? So the Ran explains that first of all, we have to understand what size is this chaser exactly. Later on, the Gemara is going to deal with this later on in Membrav, but it makes a big difference. If the chaser, chaser or anything, any kind of object, there's a minimum size that something has to have in order to be considered that kind of thing. The Gemara deals with this mostly in the first parak above Basra. We learned a little bit about it in Ksuvos. A chaser. No. I mean, it's 4x4 is a reshus. It turns out over here it's 4, but it's a different kind of thing. A chaser has to be a certain minimum size in order to function as a chaser. That minimum size, the Gemara explains in Bava Basra, is where you have a space of 4 amos in front of your doorway, 4 amos out from your doorway by the width of the doorway, to use basically as like a parking spot to unload your groceries and burdens and whatnot, as well as you have to have a space, an available space in the chatzar of 4x4 amos. Therefore, if this chatzar that's owned jointly by these partners is big enough that each one has their driveway as well as their 4x4 amos, then the concept of our Mishnah wouldn't apply, because then we would say, instead of you're going to step into the other person's property or vice versa, look, you each mudr hana from the other one, split it. It's big enough to split. Each of you will have half of the original chatzar. Yes, split the chatzar. Each of you will have an area of the chatzar big enough for it to function as a chatzar. That's called yeshva din chalota.
So you need 4x4 on one side, 4x4 on the other, and in
plus the driveways. Plus the driveway. The driveways are 4 amos out from each door by the width of the door. So if a person has a door 2 amos wide, then it means he's entitled to a strip of the chatzah 2x4 amos in front of his door to unload his packages and whatnot, plus an unoccupied area of the chatzah of 4x4 amos. That din chalukah is where the chatzah is big enough to be able to do that. Where the chatzah is large enough that you're able to divide it, each of them can get a half of it, and each one will have a driveway plus 4x4. It's called Yeshba Din Chalukah. We touched on it in the name. We touched on it in Ksobas, I don't remember in what context, but. So if there's a Din Chalukah, then one or the other of them can force the other one to do that. So let's split the chatzah. The Gemara discusses in Baba Basra then that they may want to put up a wall between them, etc. That's, yeah. But if the chatzah is smaller than that, if the chatzah is smaller than that, what happens is if they were to split it, neither one is going to have a piece of land large enough to serve as a chatzah, to function as a chatzah. Therefore, it's called Ein Bad Din Chalukka. There's no din that neither one of them can force the other to split it up. We might discuss in Baba Basra, is there a concept of something else? Is there a concept of good or agud, where one of them can tell the other one, either you sell me your portion or I'll sell you my portion, and I don't want to be with you in this chatzar anymore, but since it's too small for us to split, then let's do it that way. One of us will buy the other one out. The Gemara discusses that in Baba Basra. It's not really relevant to our purposes over here. But because what our Mishnah is saying is we have this machloikas in our Mishnah that these two people are also to have enough from each other.
Right.
And the Tanakhama is saying that neither one is allowed to go into the chatzar, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying each one can. If the chatzar... Bredero we're going to talk about. That's going to be the long discussion that Rana has. Wait a second. The point is, the Gemara ends up explaining, if the chatzar is big enough that it has din chalukah, then Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov wouldn't say that each of them can still use the whole chatzar. No, go ahead and split it, and that way you don't have a problem in the first place. Only if it's in but din chalukah, that's when Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, look, since it's too small to divide up among two people, then b'les b'reira, each one of them owns the chatzar, and therefore you have to allow each of them to use it.
Even if they have a
neder against each other. So what's the deal over here? So there are mepharshim who explain, Tosfos in particular explain, that when we say zenichas aser shaloi means each one is allowed to go into the chatzar, but only into their half. So again, this chatzar is less than 8x4, let's say. So therefore, there's no din chalukah in it. So each one is allowed to walk into their half, but they're not allowed to trespass onto the other one's half. That's how Tosfos learns it. I guess so. I mean, I guess it would have to be. On the other hand, the Ran explains that not. The Ran takes the view that no, each one of them is allowed to walk around in the whole chatzar. Now, this gets into here's where we get into the matter of Breda. So the Gemara explains in Baba Kama, the Gemara discusses the Gemara has a discussion about our Mishnah, and the Gemara ends up saying over there that the machlokes between Rav Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim is on the question of Breira. In fact, we learned that this Mishnah is also quoted at the end of Beitza, where we also had a sugya on the concept of Breira, and the Gemara quoted it in that connection also. So now the question becomes what do we mean Breira? Meaning, in other words, that When Reuven walks into the chatzar, retroactively we consider that this chatzar belonged to him all this time, and therefore he's allowed to walk in it. Similarly, when Shimon walks in it, same thing.
When it's no chalukah.
When there's no din chalukah, because again, if there's din chalukah, don't rely on Breira, just split it, and then he can split it, and then each one has their own. Now, then the question becomes though, now the Ram starts to tell us. But now the Ran starts off a long discussion on this topic. First of all, the first question the Ran has is like this. Given that the chatzar is not big enough to split, how can the Chachamim say that Reuven has the ability to aser Shimon from going into the chatzar? I mean, the fact of the matter is both of them own it in partnership. That means that Reuven has part ownership of it and Shimon has part ownership. How does Reuven have the ability to prevent Shimon from using the part of it that belongs to him?
Because it's not dividable.
That's the point, because it's not dividable. But how is it? Here's the key thing that Ann points out. That when we say the two people own the chatzar in partnership, this is the point that the Ran develops over here. It doesn't mean that half of the chatzar right now belongs to Reuven and half of it belongs to Shimon. It actually means that each one of them owns the entire chatzar. So therefore, when Reuven, it means that right now they own that whole chatzar. And the Chachamim are saying ein breira. We don't say that we allow breira. We don't say that we allow us to retroactively consider when Reuven is using it now. All this time it was his. No, we're saying that up until now this chatzar was Shimon's, for example, and now Reuven is using it, which is illegal because he's having enough from Shimon. I have the chatzar technically belongs to him. Sure, but we don't mean that there's a definable area which belongs to Reuven and a definable area which belongs to Shimon. No, all of it belongs to Reuven or all of it belongs to Shimon, and therefore it'd be passing back and forth from one to the other, and that would be a problem. Now,
Reuven or Reuven are there without the other being there.
Because if the Chachamim are saying ein breira means we don't means that we say that right now Reuben is using the schotzer, but right now Reuben is using the schotzer, but part of it, but it also part of it is owned by Shimon. Shimon has a kinyan on guf. He has a kinyan on the entire thing. Reuben also has a kinyan on the entire thing. Yes, if we said yesh breira, then we would say that. If we said yesh breira, we would say that when Reuben starts using the chotzer, we would say that that means that for the moment, Shimon's ownership of it is suspended, and Reuben and Reuben is taking over. And actually, we say retroactively, it's considered as though to begin with, as soon as Reuben set foot in it, then it became his.
Right.
But the Rabbanon don't hold to that. The Rabbanon hold ein breira.
All the time.
The same way as we say in many other areas of halacha, we say that there's machlokes whether yesh breira or ein breira. Do we say that what's picked out now is considered that it was this way to begin with or not? We talk about it in Beitza, for example, in connection with when heirs inherit property. Do we say that Reuben got this part of the estate, Shimon got that part of the estate? Do we say that to begin with, that all along retroactively Reuben owned this piece as of when the father died, and Shimon owned this piece as of when the father died? Or do we say that no, it was up in the air until Reuben actually got his and Shimon actually got his? That's yesh breira versus ein breira. But Chachamim are saying you ein breira, which means therefore when Reuben walks onto the property at that moment. He's walking onto property that's owned by Shimon. Even though it doesn't matter, but Shimon has full ownership of it. Reuben also has full ownership of it. But the fact that Shimon has full ownership is able to prevent Reuben from using it, and vice versa.
So he's breaking his
net. That's the idea. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov then holds, as the Gemara says in Bava Kamma, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds yesh breira. Now, the problem with that, meaning that when Reuben walks into the property, we consider that retroactively all this time it belonged to him. Now, the problem with that Ron deals with at some length over here is, we usually say throughout Shas that when it comes to Breira, when it comes to Dinim D'Araisa, we do not say Yesh Breira, we say Ein Breira, because we have to be Machmir, and when it comes to Dinim D'Rabbanan, there we can be Meitzel and say Yesh Breira. Nedarim is a Din D'Araisa. So how are we saying over here, if the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and the Gemara ends up saying, and usually it is, usually Mishnah Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Kavanaki, and the Gemara ends up saying that it is, then how are we saying yesh breira? They'll have to, I don't know, climb in through the window, coming through the back door, whatever. It's not our concern. They'll have to be matir nadir or whatever, yeah. Okay, so there's a few different possibilities that the Ran goes through. Number one, he brings from Rabbeinu Tam that it's true the halacha here is of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says it's mutter because yesh breira. We would say yes, the halacha is like him, but not because of breira, but rather for a different reason. We started saying that the whole problem with walking into the chatzah would be a problem of vitur. We could say very simply, the halacha is that vitur is not a problem. Something that an average person wouldn't mind is not considered a hana. The average person doesn't mind somebody else walking through their chatzah to get to their own house. Therefore, it shouldn't be a problem. So we can say, in practice, the halacha is like a blood of ben Yaakov, not because breira or not, but because vitur is mutter.
Well, you say vitur here, people hate each other,
No, that's the point. Vitur is something that the average person, under normal circumstances, wouldn't mind. So even when they make a neder against each other, again, according to Rabbi Eliezer from the previous parak, we said at the beginning of the previous parak, Rabbi Eliezer holds vitur as usur. So therefore, even something that the average person wouldn't mind, according to Rabbi Eliezer, still usur to have that kind of anah. According to the Rabbanan, not. So we could argue, the halacha of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov over here, that you're allowed to walk through the chaser. Why? Because that's vitur. That's something that under normal circumstances nobody would mind. Therefore, even in this case, where they hate each other and they were mudah hanah from each other, we would still say it's okay. The problem with that is that we had several mishnayos in the previous parak, stam mishnayos, that said that vitur are also. We had the first, the second, the third mishnah of the previous parak that all implied that all of a sudden we're going to turn around and say that the halacha is not like any of those mishnayos.
You're not the same...
It doesn't matter whether the same Tanoim. Usually, I mean, halacha to Stam Mishnah. If we had Stam Mishnah in the previous Perek that implies that Vitur is a problem for Mudah Hanah, yeah. We can't all of a sudden have now that we're going to say that halacha is like a blood of Yaakov because Vitur is Mudah. So that doesn't work, the Ram says. Another.
Sorry,
well, wait. So we're still trying to deal with the problem. How is it the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov as mutter? Each of them can walk into the chatzar, but how does that work? How does that work with the previous mishnayos and also with the rule that yes, that in Breira in things deraisa? Let's house up a little over here. Okay. So that's one. So the Ran says that doesn't really work. Then he goes through another possibility. Which is that even in things that are right, so sometimes there can be... No, because if we say that Vitor would work, but then Vitor would force us to say that Halacha is not like the Mishnayos in the previous Perek, and we don't want to say that. Yeah. So, okay, let's try another possibility that Ram says. Maybe even in certain things that are right, so maybe we would say, Yesh Breira, maybe we would say that that there are cases where we would allow Breira. Okay, and then the Ran goes through a long discussion that ends up like this. Basically, he says, I mean, he goes through a few possibilities. He says like this: the Breira that we're talking about over here is a little bit different than the Breira that we talk about throughout the rest of Shas. Usually in Shas, when we talk about Breira, is a classic case of Breira is, for example, you take Truma, you have a jug of wine, you're declaring that 2% of it is Truma, but 10% is Ma'aser Rishon, etc. You drink the whole barrel, you leave over the 12% for Truma and Ma'aser, and you're going to argue that that 12% is the original, retroactively, that was the 12% you meant to designate all along. That would be Yesh Breira. So we said in Daraisa it doesn't work, and in things did Abanan it does. So what's the difference? The point is, that kind of Breira is that there's basically, there's a doubt, really, on the entire thing. Every drop of wine in that barrel could have been part of the drop of Truma.
Breira means you had to take them out to begin with.
Yes. Whereas over here, the point is, because both of them have a full kinyan on the chaser, so if we know that Reuben owns the whole thing, we know that Shimon owns the whole thing, really the only question, the only doubtful part is who owns it when. So it's not like with Truma, for example, where is this drop Truma or is this drop Cholin. Here it's when we know it belongs to Reuben, we know it belongs to Shimon, but when does it belong to Reuben, when does it belong to Shimon? That kind of thing we can say yesh breira even in a case deraisa, and that is how we can have
truth.
Effectively, yeah, that's what it means. When Reuben, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, when Reuben walks into the property at that moment, he's creating the circumstance that now he's creating the breira that he's now activating his ownership over it as of now.
So it's
considered his, not Shimon's. Therefore, he's not having an offer from Shimon, and vice versa.
Fine, but if they walk both at the same time...
If they both walk at the same time, that's a different matter. We're not talking about that.
Problem.
That would be a problem. We're not talking about that.
But it can happen.
We're not saying that. We're saying, when we say Zenich has sexual love, Zenich has sexual love, it means each one can come in at their own time. But we don't mean that they can both come in at the same time.
We mean they cannot.
They can't, right, that's it. So that's the idea then. So that's how the Ran ends up explaining it, therefore. So now we can still say that Vitor is also, which fits with the previous Perek. We can say the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that each one can come in at their own time. And that still works with the idea of Breira not working in things deraisa, because here it's a different kind of Breira than the regular one in Shas. The regular one in Shas is we're not certain about the status of the object at all. Here we know the status of it, we're just not sure when the status is in effect and when it's not in effect. However, both of them are also to put up millstones in the shared chatzar, or an oven, or to raise chickens over there. Now, what's the point of mentioning those things? So the Ran and Tosfos point out like this: the Gemara explains in Baba Basra that those are the kind of things. Again, usually neighbors don't mind. Neighbors don't mind. If one neighbor doesn't mind the other one bringing in a millstone into their shared courtyard. So again, that would be a thing of vitriol. Everybody has to grind their grain, right? So
it doesn't have to be in the courtyard.
No, but where else are you going to do it? The courtyard in those days was where you, nowadays you do it inside the house. But in those times, the houses were small. You did a lot of the household tasks in the courtyard.
It's a small one.
We're talking about a small one. We're not talking about a huge industrial one.
The courtyard is a small.
Oh, okay, fine. But still, you know, you got to do your grinding someplace. You can't be expected to do it inside the house. The houses are also small. Okay. The point is that usually this is the kind of thing that neighbors don't object to each other about. So again, it's a case of vitter. Since we've established that vitter is osser, therefore, in this case, these two people are both osser in it. Even something that neighbors normally wouldn't mind, which is the definition of vitter, we said vitter is osser in all cases. Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov are saying that it's mutter in our Mishnah for both of them to walk in, not because of vitter, that's what the Ran ended up saying, not because of vitter, but rather because yesh v'reira. Because we say that when he walks in, at that moment, it becomes his ownership that's existed all along is now being activated. It's now retroactively being determined that his original ownership was meant to take effect right now, and not at some later time. So it's not a matter of vitter. So vitter is still also, even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and therefore you can't put up your millstones or whatever. Tosfos takes a different tack on it, which is...
They say the same thing about the mill.
Usually, the mill would be a matter of vitter. Vitter is osser. No, because when you put up your mill, you can't say that, because your mill is something that stays there permanently. What are you going to say, as long as your mill... A mill? Yeah, it's not something you take in and out.
It's a stone. It's a grinding
stone. It's a grinding stone. You don't take it in and out on a regular basis. You put it there. You keep it there.
Well, that's incompatible.
That's what we're saying. That's why it's incompatible. Tosfos takes a different tack on it, which is that when you put up millstones or an oven over there, it causes that more people are going to come into the courtyard. Now, Tosfos, remember, held that when Elazar ben Yaakov says that each one can go into Zenich HaSecheloi, not like the Ran who said that each one can use the entire chatzor at any given time because of the Yesh Breira thing, Tosfos has said each one can have to stick to his half of the chatzor. Well, if you put up a Rechayim or a Tanner over there, or you have chickens which run around, you are going to be using the entire chatzor. Therefore, no good. Even Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov can't say that that's good. That's our choice. Or Gabal Tanagolim, so neither of them is allowed to raise chickens.
Because necessarily it uses.
So again, according to the Ram, the first explanation of Tosfos, the reason is even though these are things of vitru, nevertheless vitru is also by Mudr Hana.
Yes,
and according to Tosfos, second explanation, because they take up the entire chatzer and you're only allowed to be in your half, according to Blazman Yaakov. Okay, what happens if only one of them, until now we were talking about where it's bilateral, both of them are also tavanah from each other. Now, what if only one of them is also tavanah from the other? Lo yikonis l'chotzer, so that one is not allowed to go into the chotzer. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, again, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, I'm a yachalu lo yoy malo l'sheikh shali ani nichnas, v'eni nichnas l'sheikh shalcha. No, he can say that I'm going into my chatzah, I'm not going into your chatzah. Again, according to Tosfos, it would mean I'm going to stay in my half, and according to the Ran, it would mean when I come in, then I'm activating my ownership over it, and then
over the whole thing.
Over the whole thing, yeah. Through Breira, right, because the Ran had said that Breira works in this case. Now, the Ran points out there's not really a chiddush so much in this part of the braise. It recapitulates the same machlokas. The reason why the Mishnah mentions it is to mention the next point. The kofin is a neder limker es chelkos. We force the one who made the neder to sell his part, because the difference is like this. The Ran says, Mela, when both of them are also to each other, both of them have the same restrictions, so therefore there's not going to be a problem. One of them is going to see the other one doing things and get jealous and decide to do it himself and break his neder. But if only one of them is osur and the other one is mutter, so the one who's mutter is going to be putting up his millstones and then walking around in the whole chasur according to Tosfos and so forth, and the other one is going to get jealous of him and think, you know what, if he can do it, I can do it too, not realizing that then he's going to be violating his neder. Yeah. So therefore, what we should do is we should force him to sell his part of the chasur in order to avoid that issue. If he can be mapped in neder, fine. But if there's no, in general, whenever we talk about these things, you know, yeah, there is always there can be the option about charis mandatim. But always we're assuming that it's not. For whatever reason, it's off the table. There's no chacham around, or at the time he made the neder, all the psachim were
the
yeah, whatever, you know.
Selling out his mom and
it's not so much moment versus iser. It's just, the Mishnah obviously could always say, fine, force him to be matzah the neder, but we have to talk about what if you can't? What if, for whatever reason, there's no way? When he made the neder, he said, I thought of all the possible, all the possible repercussions, and I still am making the neder, let's say. So then you just have to force him to sell. Now, the question is, by the way, now there's a few different possibilities. You can have, when Reuben is also Kavanah from Shimon, there's a few ways in which that can happen. And there's two ways, basically. Reuben can say that I'm also to have enough from Shimon's property, or Shimon can say you are also to have enough from my property, or my property is also to you, to be technical, whatever. Which one are we talking about over here, then, should be forced to sell the... It's not that both of them are also. Only one of them is also. Reuben is also to have enough from Shimon. But there's two ways. It could be that Reuben said, I'm also to have anah from Shimon's property. Shimon's property is also to me. Or it could be that Shimon said, my property is also to Reuben. He sells it to Shimon. He sells it to some other third party. But he sells his portion of it. But the point is that the point is, which one in that case is going to be the one who's forced to sell? Is it the one who's also, or is it the one who created the iser? The mudr or the madir? There's actually different opinions about it in the Rishonim. The Ram takes the view that it is the mudr who will be forced to sell. So if Shimon says my property, if Shimon says my property is also to Reuben, then it will be Reuben who is forced to sell because he's the one who may end up breaking his neder. And obviously, how much more so? If Reuben himself said Shimon's property is also to me, then how much more so he'd be the one forced to sell? The Rambam says the other way around. The Rambam says that, on the contrary, the one who created the Itzer is the one who's forced to sell. So if Shimon says, my property is also to Reuben, then it will be Shimon who will force to sell. You could argue that's because it's fairer. I saw an explanation that it goes with the machlokas that we've had before between the Ram and the Rambam. When you have somebody who created the Isser and somebody else to whom it's also, we have the case of a husband and wife, for example, if the neder is broken, which one gets the punishment? We have the Rambam said the husband, that's the thing. We had, for example, the case where a husband puts his wife under a neder, that she's not allowed to go to her father's house, for example, not allowed to have anah from him if she goes to her father's house within a certain period of time. If that neder is broken, we said the Rambam says he gets the malchus, and the Ram said that she gets the malchus. Same idea, then. Same idea, that the Ram is saying the one on whom the Isser is the one who's chayev for breaking it, and the Rambam would say the one who created the Isser is the one who's chayev. Similarly, over here, we'd say the Ram would say the one who the Isser is on is the one who has to sell, and the Rambam would say the one who created the Isser is the one who has to sell. And then there are other Rishonim who say that actually it would be in either case. In either case, whether Reuben created the Isser on himself or whether Shimon created the Isser on Reuben, whether Reuben created the Isser on himself or whether Shimon created the Isser on Reuben,
one of them
has to sell. That's what that was. The Mishnah continues, but if we continue with the whole Mishnah, we don't have much to do tomorrow. So I think let's stop over here and we'll continue with the rest of the Mishnah tomorrow. That's a shame. I'm not going to be here tomorrow, but we have Bez Hashem, a very capable substitute. I mean.